Guys, what is up? Welcome back to the Fit Dad Life podcast, where we help busy dads become the physically, financially, and relationally fit leaders that their wives and kids deserve them to be. Let's get to it. Welcome back to the show, everybody. This is your host, Chris Farrell. And today on the Fit Dad Life podcast, I have my friend Dan Krask with me. Dan, how's it going, man?
It is going very well. How about you?
Good, buddy. Good. Thanks so much for being on the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, dude. So something that, you know, I definitely want to mention here is we could go a lot of different directions with you, my man. I mean, you are a successful entrepreneur that built a great brand business, and you know, you have four kids and a wife, and I mean, you're a great leader. And just in my few conversations with you, man, I've definitely just picked up a very genuine nature about you, and I know you have a lot to give.
Thank you.
Of course, man. Today, I really want to focus on your weight loss journey, man. I mean, the fact that you lost over 150 pounds has just been, man, what an incredible story, and I can't wait to dive in.
I'm happy to share my story. It's been a lot of ups and downs. That's for sure.
Oh, for sure, man. For sure. Well, the biggest thing I think about today, Dan, is I know that your story can provide a lot of hope for people that might have been in your shoes in the past. And so, yeah, man, let's dive right into this.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, it's funny. Someone might see your before and after picture, and a lot of people will see the before Dan body and the after body. And I think the funny thing is a lot of people are going to see the glory, but not really know the story. And so with your story, I'd like to take us all the way back to when you were a kid, if that's cool. And let's just kind of dive into your home life, man. What was it like growing up in the Krask household?
I had a great home life. Mom and dad together, blue collar family. Dad worked at a factory. Mom stayed home most of the time until we were in high school. Grandparents nearby, aunts, uncles, cousins, big family. Lots of get-togethers, lots of tradition. I mean, just my formative younger years are years that I really, really cherish. And it's one reason why I'm so set on giving my own kids a really fond, memorable, positive home life during their years, because I've benefited immeasurably from that. The one thing that I can look back and say, maybe that could have been done better. And to be clear, I'm not blaming anyone, but that is the role of food in our lives. We ate just like a lot of Midwestern families do for any reason whatsoever. So if there was something to celebrate, we ate. If there was something to mourn, we ate. If there was just a good day, a warm summer or spring day, we ate. If it was cold in January and everyone just wanted to huddle at grandma's house, we ate. So just lots and lots and lots and lots of food. And I think it instilled in me of course, this is kind of a popular concept right now, but kind of instilled in me the reward of food for anything. And it also created food as a comforting thing for me, which I would later abuse quite harshly later in life. But that's what the first early years were like.
So how did that kind of translate to your fitness level as a kid?
Well, my brother was always the athlete. He's younger than me. Just he and I were the siblings of our home. And I was always the artist, the musician. Had no interest whatsoever about getting into sports or athletics. That was really kind of attributed that to just being my brother's thing. And I just stayed away from it sheerly for lack of interest. Actually, a fun, maybe not so fun, depressing fact about me. I'm not bothered by it, but I've never in my life, I'm 42 as we record this, I have never been on a organized sport team in my life.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So I've never played sports whatsoever. I got into a little bit of competitive running in college, but it was never a team sport, and it was never really like an official track and field kind of thing. But athletics, fitness, just were never part of my life.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I mean, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
no.
you have found a way to be physically fit without athletics. And frankly, your body's probably better off for it. Honestly, man. I mean, I know so many people who played different sports and now their knees are screaming because the conditioning coaches back in high school didn't understand that 100 squats was a bad idea. So,
mm-hmm.
man, that's so when it comes to, you know, kind of your physical fitness level as a kid and explaining how your family, you know, just ate, that's what you guys did. Do you think there was anything else that kind of contributed to the eating outside of it just being the norm? Was there anything from like an emotional eating or depression or just pure ignorance of not really understanding exactly what it was doing?
I would say that there came a point in time when it reached kind of a perfect storm. And I get the idea that this is more and more common. So around middle school, I began to be bullied quite heavily, actually, physically punched on a daily basis, you know, physically just a lot of bad stuff happened back then. And this is like 1988, 89, I think 87, 88, 89 were my middle, sixth, seventh, eighth grade years. And back then, this kind of stuff was just looked at as boys being boys. And, you know, I could walk into school and show the PE teacher, show whomever these bruises I'd have on my arms and legs and back and shoulders and stuff. And it was just like, you know, oh, well, suck it up. But in looking back on it, I realized that all of that stuff was happening, oddly enough, during PE class. Huh. So if I already had an aversion or just like a innate non-interest in athletics, in hindsight, I can't help but wonder if, since all this bullying took place during PE, that just sealed the deal. Like, I don't want to move. I don't want to do anything related to sports or movement or anything, because that equals pain. That equals rejection. That equals abuse. You know what I mean?
Wow, man, that's powerful, dude. That's incredible. I mean, it seems to me that your subconscious mind would definitely tell you that.
Sure. And as a, you know, I was a younger kid for my grade. I was one of those kids that entered a school kind of on the younger side. So I was always the youngest kid in my class. I entered high school at 13, graduated at 17, entered college at 17 too. And so all this stuff is happening to a fairly young kid, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. And you're just not equipped to deal with complex associations and things like that. You just know that, you know, well, PE equals abuse, PE equals something bad. And so I will dread that kind of thing.
Man, yeah, that's, wow. So what things did you attach to outside of food? You know, obviously you didn't have the sports thing going, you were being bullied and things. Were there any particular passions that you attached to, or was it just food?
Food was the underlying thing. Thankfully, I had, like I said, I had a really good family. So if, you know, PE was an hour and a half, whatever, a day. And, you know, there was a lot of anxiety being built up to that point. And then once it was over for that day. And I could go home and enjoy home life and all was well for another 24 hours. Food was there to comfort me. Food was there to, you know, be an aid and something to gel around with family and the handful of friends I had. But outside of food, I was always into music, and both as a fan and also as a budding musician back then. That's about the time I picked up my first guitar and started playing. So, you know, between food and music, that's really how I stayed afloat.
Gotcha, man. Yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody has to attach to something, has to identify with something, especially when you're going through a tough time, because kids can be so mean, man. And
yeah,
honestly, it's sad to hear that things weren't handled the way they should have been handled back then.
Man. Mm-hmm. It's just a different time, you know, totally different time.
So Dan, what age did you start to realize that that your physical body was maybe not like some of your peers?
Well, that's the other part of the perfect storm, is that it also happened in middle school. And I can remember I had like moobs, you know, man boobs or boy boobs, I guess, from being overweight. And I remember my shirts, I would do this thing where I would like pluck, I would grab the front of my collar and I would like pull it. And I did that so much to try and create wrinkles on the front of my shirt to kind of like hide my boy boobs that, that my shirts would get stretched so bad. Like they would just have like this constant fold in the front up by the neck. just cause I was so, embarrassed about my body. And then at the same time, I've got guys, you know, in the locker room and out in the field of play reaffirming that, yes, you are a freak and here's a good punch because you're a freak. And then, you know, it was just, middle school was awful. It was just 11 shades of bad. So all that came together at the same time.
I'm sorry you had to go through that, man. I mean, like I said, times have changed, but I think the thing is, these things still happen today. What would you say to parents, Dan, that have a kid in maybe your similar position and don't know how to handle what's happening with their kid, but they're hearing your story and they're like, oh man, this is my kid. How should they handle this?
Well, I'd say, first of all, to both parents, the missing piece back then that is present right now is social media and texting. And if the abuse that I had gone through as a middle schooler followed me 24/7 through devices and stuff like that, I mean, I would be a very, very different person than I am right now.
Wow.
You know, by the grace of God, I went through all of that at the time I did. And I feel so bad for the kids that have to deal with that these days, that are, you know, kind of in the situation or worse or similar that I was in back then.
Sure. It's amplified now.
It never goes away. And there's some things that, you know, maybe a kid couldn't say to me because a teacher was too close or some type of authority was nearby. Well, now they can just text it to you and it goes from your brain, from their brain to your brain with no filters. None of that whatsoever. So I actually am trying to keep my own kids off of social media for as long as is humanly possible. I've got an 11-year-old as my oldest, followed by a 7-year-old, and the girls are 5 and 2. So we got some time on the youngers, but my 11-year-old, he's technically a middle schooler. They start middle school here in the little town I'm in fifth grade. My wife and I saw it going kind of downhill right away just from the school's perspective. So we pulled him and we're homeschooling him now. But it speaks to the other thing, which is we saw that his grades were probably going to be sacrificed in the name of, you know, social cues and kind of the horror story that most middle schoolers go through. And that is that I think that parents really need to focus on making their home I don't know how else to say it, but like just like a fortress of good, that their family, that home life, the family life is sacred and safe. And that's the place that a kid can really find solace in. It's going to be found in the details, I think, of being present. Dads need to, you know, put the phones away. If you're in the middle of an intense conversation that's work-related on your way home, park your car. I heard on your episode earlier, I do the same. Keep your car parked outside or figure out some kind of family cue when you walk in that they can know to just back off so you can get to your spot, you know, your home office or whatever, and take and finish that call before you come out. And I don't care if you have to wait 10 minutes after the phone call to calm down, but, you know, ditch work and leave it there. In other words, just make the family life really sacred. I think that really made all the abuse that I went through and so bearable because I had a great, positive, wonderful family life to come home to.
Man, that's powerful, dude. Absolutely. I think there's, That's a great point, Dan. I mean, because when you think about social media and how it amplifies bullying and how some of these kids were in your similar situation, now we can talk about how social media takes away from those kids in more ways than one, because mom and dad are so focused on social media, and then maybe there's some form of neglect, and then they're also just being hammered with these bullying things through direct messages and things. That's, wow. It's crazy. I actually never thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's pervasive. I mean, we're all guinea pigs in this. Social media, as we know it, has only been around for 10 years. And if you think about it, social media was created by the most antisocial people out there, usually. Engineers, developers, coders. I work with these people. I hire them, so I know their personalities. I can, and profiling is part of good marketing, so I can create a kind of a customer persona there for that demographic. But, you know, coders, developers, the people who started social media are some of the most antisocial people you'll ever meet. And they created the entire infrastructure that we now find in. And so now there's this focus on authenticity and transparency and just being you and your tribe, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, we had that before social media came along. And now we're trying to replicate it through a screen when you could just put the screen down and just be present in front of the person in front of you. But that's a whole nother rant you're going to get me on.
That is, man. That's another direction we could have gone with this. Well, I think that's powerful. I think it's very, very relative to what we're talking about.
Me too.
As an action step to really show parents, like, hey, you're not only maybe like having your nose in the phone. And listen, I'm guilty of this too. You're not only having your nose in the phone and thinking you're just, you know, kind of getting some time away, but you're intentional, like you're not meaning to, but you're indirectly maybe neglecting your kid who may be going through a similar situation of bullying. And that's powerful.
Yeah. The parent has to be proactive on this, in my opinion, especially the dads. The dad has to come up and say, you know, is there something going on that we can, I'm a big fan of coming up to my kids every once in a while, every other week, every month at least, and saying, hey, is there anything going on in your life that you're maybe a little embarrassed to talk about or something like that, that we can go out, go shopping, go for, you know, a bite out to eat or something and talk. And I started doing that when my oldest was 5. And because even at that age, they're starting to pick up things they don't understand. It's not always like, you know, bullying and stuff like that, but just like things they don't understand about, you know, why we do the things the certain way. So like, I'm a big fan of just like putting in little things throughout everyday life that create spaces for my kids to talk to me openly. I don't want to be their best friend. I still need to be their parent.
Right. You don't want to cross that line.
Right. But I believe in terms of shepherding them and guiding them is to be proactive. They're not going to always come to me, and nor should I want them to always have to come to me with their problems. Sure. You know, I need to go to them and say, hey, let's talk. What's going on? How you doing?
I love that, man. I love that. I think that's very applicable, useful advice. So in kind of bringing things back around, at this point in the story, we're in middle school, and you know, now you're in a position where you're bullied, and luckily you have that support system at home. So how long was it until some type of a change started to be created in your life? And I mean, what age were you when that spark happened?
I was about 12, 13, and another confluence of events happened. I got a paper route. And that overlapped into my entry into high school. And the same time, our little towns, my town and the town around, a lot of little country towns around mine, went through what was called an annexation. And it ended up being a thing where, I don't know, probably a dozen or less more rural school districts decided to consolidate and bus all their kids to a more central high school. Talk about reset, the huge reset button socially. I'm coming out of this really abusive thing in middle school, and then all of a sudden the vote happens and we're now bused to this new high school. So there's a lot of like feeling it out in terms of how it goes. But for me and my classmates, it was like, okay, cool. This is a nice, really nice breaking even point. So I was able to make new friends and create new experiences. I could kind of recreate myself around some different people. And the paper route was great because it got me out of the house and it made me walk 2 miles every single, well, 6 days a week, rain or shine, doesn't matter the weather. You're out there walking. I had to go collect.
So physical fitness was forced.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I had to go learn business. I was there to collect money. I had to make change, you know, for the subscriptions and all that stuff. They really entrusted us with we were just walking around with a bag of cash, you know.
Right. <That's
hilarious. laughs> Totally different day, time. But it was great. It got me out of the house. I started a new chapter of school, and that's really what was the big change there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so when you had the paper route and you were walking those 2 miles a day and you had a chance to reinvent yourself, were you losing weight during that period of time? Or
oh, dude. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm in the height of puberty and my body just like went to a beanpole immediately. So I just dropped all this weight dramatically and grew my hair out and became a metalhead and found other metalheads to hang out with at this big school. And it was just a totally different life change.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So from being a self-proclaimed beanpole here, did we end up gaining the weight back?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's dive into that.
Well, we're going to have to fast forward some time. High school was pretty much just, you know, being kind of a beanpole.
Right.
And I always found myself working. But again, walking, working. You know, I come from a long line of blue collar and farming people. And so work suits me, like labor suits me very well. And so that happened. And then in college, I packed on the freshman 15 or 20 pounds and food. You know, I started to gain a lot of weight in my freshman year or two of college.
Gotcha. So at what point were you at your heaviest before this ultimate journey started?
Okay, so there's a couple yo-yo moments here. Once college starts, I gain the weight, and then I realize, oh my gosh, I don't want to go back to middle school, and I'm in college. Because I hear, once again, I've been able to reinvent myself. I went off to like a Chicagoland college, had all new friends, totally reset. I then became obsessed with it, and I became someone who just did a massive amount of cardio. And at the same time, I didn't go look, I need to preface this. I did not go looking for an eating disorder. I just sort of developed one based on logic, if I could be as crude as to say that. But I had two forces working against me. One is I really, really like to eat like a college student. I love the junk food. I love all this stuff. On the other hand, I can gain body fat really fast. And so I found myself doing all this cardio and I couldn't make sense of it. I didn't know where to go to find help on like, you know, there was no trainers on campus or anything like that. And like I said, I wasn't involved in athletics. So this time I'm firmly in the art department, the design department, stuff like that. So they're just totally different worlds that don't overlap really. But I did find myself at the campus gym just, you know, doing a ton of cardio. So I began to, and this is going to get a little gross. Anyone eating lunch probably should pause right now. But I began to use laxatives to flush out the food. Like if I wanted to go on a binge, if I wanted to eat a lot of food, I would include a little laxative with me. And in my mind, it was, I'm just going to not let this food stick around. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Well, that's when I learned that I have a very, very strong compulsive part to my personality, to my makeup. And I don't do things moderately. I am all in or all out. There's no gray in my life. So I began to go on binges. I mean, overeating, compulsive eating, what we would call compulsive overeating these days. And then I was like, oh crap, I don't want to gain all this weight. So I would down a laxative to keep maybe 6 months, 8 months into doing that, I started to realize, and a couple of very, very close friends knew what I was doing. And I don't remember who it was, but someone said, you do realize that's bulimia. Like what you're doing right now is bulimic, right? I was like, no, that's when you throw up, not when you take a dump. They're like, no, that is definitely bulimia and you need to look it up and get some help. And sure enough, I looked it up. That is bulimia. I mean,
it doesn't matter how it comes out. It just comes about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can look back on those days and see just how malnourished I was. Here's the thing about abusing food. No one or very, very few people, in my experience, are ever going to call you out on it. You have to reach some extreme level, like extreme morbid obesity, you know, like my 600-pound life kind of thing. Or in my case, during that time, I was down to 130 pounds. I'm a 6'1 dude. That's a skinny,
that is a bean pole.
Yes. And I looked unhealthy. I could look back on those photos and I remember, you know, my relatives saying, you look really skinny. And I would just say, I'll run a lot now. But looking back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I went out in public looking like that. And so I went to one end of the spectrum of like just being so totally skinny because that's what I was chasing at the time. I was never chasing healthy. I was just chasing not being fat.
Gosh, man, that's real and raw, Dan. That's awfully vulnerable, man. I mean, I got to think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I got to think that this all is a result of, you know, just the lack of confidence you had through middle school and these kids bullying you and then obviously not having a relationship with food. And I mean, were there any particular like goals you were going for or was it just like, I just got to lose weight because people are making fun of me?
I think that in college, it was probably a fear of being made fun of or a fear of weight gain means getting attacked again. Like looking back on it and with the help of some counseling that I received later, I can look back and I say, okay, you know, at some point during those years, I realized that my brain must have been thinking, if you gain weight, you're going to get physically abused. You know, you're quote unquote friends are going to start attacking you. And of course, these new friends that I made in college, that never would have entered their mind to do something like that. Just, you know, different time.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, obviously from the past, you were pretty, pretty worried about that. So that makes perfect sense that you would react that way. So let's fast forward a little bit to the point in time where you started to bring it all together, the dots connected, and you said, like, now this is about health and longevity. And so I would assume you probably yo-yoed back up to a pretty high weight.
Yeah. I went through a really, in college, I was engaged to a girl. She called it off after things were already booked and stuff. It was like a big, big moment in my life. And I just went all in on food. Only this time, I was living by myself. I was working very strange hours from 4 to midnight at a sub-brand of the Chicago Sun-Times running their ad department. And I lived a nocturnal life and I had really no friends around. I was living in a far northern suburb of Chicago, living this super weird life of weird hours. And I just, this time I could go to food for my comfort and there was no one around to see me, stop me, whatever. So that's when I really ballooned up. And I got up to 325 one time. I stepped on a scale and I was at 325. And
so from 130 to 325.
Yes.
No one knew about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's drastic, man. That is drastic.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So we yo-yoed. We went obviously from a kid who wasn't as physically fit as maybe your peers, and then you started to lose the weight, but in a very, you know, just natural way through puberty and just being more active in general. Then we went to college and we came to a point where we just had this emotional baggage that caused you to not necessarily do it the right way at all, right? Through bulimia and eating disorders and things. And then we ballooned from another emotional issue all the way back up to, you said 325.
Yes.
And so now where were we at? Is it now at this point in time, was it time for you to really make serious change?
Yeah, I was living in by myself, and I've reached a low point where I became obsessed with a little bit. I don't know if obsessed, but the thought of suicide would enter my mind on a regular basis. And I remember one day I became, you know, you hear people say I attempted suicide. I don't know that if I attempted suicide. I know there was a one day specific where I was pretty much ready to do that, but I don't know that I would ever say I was attempting suicide. But anyway, things got bleak, and by the grace of God, there was an opening at a very small boutique design agency in the town that the large town. You remember earlier I said that all the rural kids got bused to a bigger high school. Well, the bigger town that bigger high school was located in had this little agency. And through some interviews and negotiations, I was able to move out of the Chicago suburbs and down to my little town. And what that did is it once again gave me everyday access to what I found solace in before, a family.
Sure.
I had my parents nearby, my brother, my grandparents, aunts, uncles, and once again, family was there to make normal, to make sense of things again. And I just remember one day I was having a phone call with my mom, and she was kind of running through, we're just chatting, and we're going through all the different health problems in the family, because that's what we do, is talk, and here's how your aunt's doing, here's how your uncle doing, here's how I'm doing. And it just kind of connected in my head that, like, oh, wow, you know, it's real interesting how all these problems are connected to obesity. And I kind of ruminated on that for a while and realized that, here I am sitting here, a little over $3, and I bet I could change that. I bet I could, you know, I don't want to obsess over and get into that really ugly place I was at when I was 130 pounds.
Sure.
But I bet I could do something. The YMCA was literally two doors down from my apartment back then. This is like the early 2000s. And so I got a membership and started getting back into some cardio and just anything I could do to build up a sweat. That's what I did. I started dropping weight. Well, around that time, spring of 2001, I met my wife, a girl who would later become my wife, in a Yahoo chat room. I don't know if you remember those.
I do, actually.
Age, sex, location, ASL, you know, right, all that stuff. Right. So we met in a Christian singles chat room and struck up a conversation. That led to emails, that led to phone calls, and that led to her traveling up from Cincinnati to Northern Illinois, where I was from, to meet me. And I told her, I said, hey, look, I've just recently decided to get in shape. And I look really, really different than I do in the photos that I can send you. And she was like, well, how bad can it be? You know, this is before digital photography. You know, this is super early in the internet. And so when she met me, she was really surprised at how different I looked. I was not at all the guy in the photos. But I told her in advance, you know, I was much heavier. And she decided to stick it out and she had a room at her own hotel and I was in my apartment and we kind of hung out all weekend and pretty much hit it off. And between, you know, okay, so here's the thing. She was way out of my league. I had no business being with her. At the time, like, she was way, way more attractive than any woman I had ever dated in my life, any girl. And I remember the first night we met, I was thinking to myself, Dan, what have you gotten yourself into? you are so far out of your league. What are you even doing talking to this woman? And so I went home that night after we had dinner and I just thought, well, you know, we have a pretty good banter back and forth, so we'll at least be good friends. And so I just went about the weekend just thinking, you know, I have a good friend here. And I was so convinced that we were just going to be friends that I did not pick up on any of the signs that I could look back on now, and she kind of rubs this in my face now, that like, you know, she was really trying to get me to see that she was interested. Well, it took her like grabbing my hand while we were walking along Lake Michigan, and saying like, look, you know, let's take this a little more out of the friend realm. And so I had, I had this woman that I was like, I wanted to be better for her too. So between her and between this epiphany that I had while I was talking to my mom about obesity being a choice, or at least having some degree of choice associated with it, those two things came together to kind of give me that aha moment, that big, big turning point where I could finally start looking into sources on how do I really get in shape now? Right. That was really the turning point.
Right. So you had your why, and you know, life was coming together, but now you realize, you know, in order to maximize your potential, you have to do this right. So
yeah.
So that actually leads perfectly into, you know, I think a lot of people, the one thing that I hate about the fitness industry is you don't find the online programs where people sell the disciplines and the behaviors that you have to create. They'll tell you, okay, cool, log in a food journal and stay consistent with your movement. But nobody really dives into, you know, managing your time ruthlessly and, you know, just the incredible, you know, mental discipline that you need, that even when you're not feeling it, you got to at least show up. You got to at least show up and do your body right and make it a priority and have some non-negotiables. So, so in your journey, when it then became, okay, now I'm serious about this. Now I have my why. What were some of the disciplines and behaviors you had to create then that you didn't have before that ultimately led to your success?
That's a great, great question. It leads to all kinds of different ways it can apply to everyday life. And the way I would answer that is that I quickly saw that this time that I had carved out of my day, at first, it's kind of the honeymoon season with workouts. Everything's going great. Inevitably, life happens. Something is going to come up that is going to derail you.
Sure.
It's going to, you know, someone's going to want your time. Something is going to demand of you that portion of time that you've dedicated to this newfound love. And I didn't know how to deal with that. And so now, one of the disciplines that I had, that I even started about a year or two into the fitness journey, is that my workouts, my daily training time is, when I speak of it to others, it is, I simply call it an appointment or a meeting.
Right.
I don't need to give, I'm not required to give details on what this thing is every day, but if I'm trying to figure out a time that I can meet with someone in business, I just say, I have this thing going on from X to X. So that's off the table. What else are we looking at?
Right. So you have some non-negotiables within your time where you're like, look, in order for me to be the best I can be for my family, in order for me to be the most focused businessman that I can be, like, I have to focus on my physical fitness and nothing can get in the way.
Yeah. I don't let anything get in the way short of someone being in an ambulance or in the emergency room.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so let's fast forward a little bit. We all know things change with kids.
Mm, yes.
They absolutely do. So you have four kids. And like you said, they're ranging from 7 to 11, right?
2 to 11.
Okay, 2 yeah. to 11. I was going to say 7 to 11. Ooh, four years. Ooh.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, how did things change, Dan, when, you know, well, let's talk about this. Before you had kids, you had lost, you'd gone from 325 to roughly what?
Around 200.
Which is an amazing accomplishment. So now mm-hmm. we add kids in the mix. Now yeah. we add kids in the mix. I mean, did you yo-yo or were those non-negotiables still in place?
Well, I saw it coming because, you know, during pregnancy, you have 40 weeks to get your stuff together. So it's not like just an abrupt kind of thing. But in this case, my case, I saw it coming and I was still working for someone else at the time. I was not yet self-employed. And my wife and I had a conversation one day where she's like, what are we going to do about your gym? And I said, well, I'm glad you asked that question because I know myself and I know the kind of dad that I plan on being. And when I get home from work, I am not going to head off to a gym, stretch, shower, blah, 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 work out, and then come home and then spend time with my newborn son.
Right.
So we agreed that that was not going to happen.
Sure.
So we took a tax return and we invested in some home gym equipment and not anything like, not any like light equipment either, like really good. We went to the kind of store that sells to gyms and purchased a few small pieces, well, small, like relatively speaking, like versatile equipment, and just set up shop at home. And for, I want to say from the time he was born till 2014, so that'd be about 7 years, I just worked out at home. That's all I did was, it just allowed, during that time, like when he was 2 months old, that's when I became self-employed full-time. So I kind of got both, where I was both a stay-at-home, work-at-home dad, and I could also work out at home. So everything's at home. Home, you know, I didn't have an office outside the home yet. Everything just was home, home, home. And I enjoy that thoroughly. But that was a thing that I put in place was to get to figure out what I needed to do with my fitness needs and how that could gel with being a dad.
Sure, sure. Yeah, absolutely, man. So after you had your first kid, which is your son, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have your son, you're still sticking with things, which is admirable, man, because things change. I mean, we all have major changes when we have kids. So then the other kids come in the picture. Are we still staying super consistent with our routine, or do things change at that point?
I think looking back, I can say that my big mistake was that I didn't change my routine. So I stalled out at around 200 pounds for years.
Which is okay, because you're 6'1", and anyone is going to tell you that you're your own worst critic here.
True, true enough. At the time, though, I'm still working out. I'm still doing this work, and I'm thinking, why am I not continuing to change? And looking back, I can say, well, you weren't doing anything different. That's why. You just literally did the same workout for years. And I'm a very routine person. I love routine. To me, routine is the best. I just love it. It's where I thrive.
Sure. Me too. Me too.
So I have a very organized day. Now, as part of having that, I have buckets of time throughout the day that's kind of free. You know, whatever happens, happens, that kind of thing. But it's still structured. There's still an end to that. It's not just like chaotic. So I would say things just stalled out for those 7 years. And during those 7 years, 2011, we had Charlie. And then 2013, we had Reagan Jane. 2014 is when I joined, sadly, one of my core pieces of cardio equipment, a really nice stationary bike for the home gym, broke. And I ended up just going to the local rec center again to just, you know, see what they had going on.
Sure.
And that's when I started embracing different types of working out. That's when I really started incorporating more change into my workouts. And in 2016, my youngest was born. And so throughout that time, that pretty much from 2014 is when I start incorporating a lot more change, a lot more hypertrophy training, a lot more cardio. I started getting into HIIT workouts, and the body started changing in really cool ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think the common theme here is you didn't have the confidence back then. You didn't have the results you were looking for. Once life started to come together, you found your why, and then you started to really put the time and energy into learning how to do this right. I mean, is it safe to say that, of course, this journey hasn't been easy, but it's been a lot easier the past, you know, 10, 15 years than it was when you were younger and you had all those unhealthy, very sure. unhealthy habits.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of, things that life will, if you give it long enough, it'll show you trends and things you can see. You know, another one would be family. When I had a lot of family around, I tend to be pretty stable even during some really crappy times. Take me out of that, I kind of self-destruct. When I first moved to Cincinnati in 2003, my wife was the only person I knew. I had no friends, no family, no extended family, just no one, just cold turkey. And it was brutally lonely here. Someone described Cincinnati as like a province, like Canada, type of place that, you know, if you're not a local, if you haven't grown up here, then good luck to you.
It can be. I've heard that a lot. Yeah.
It is what it is. You know, I'm out of that mindset right now, but I think that there's just a lot of different trends you can see after a long enough period of time. You can look back and see, oh, okay, here's where I thrive. Here's where I kind of get snared up. Here's some things to look out for. And, you know, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, so first off, I appreciate you being so vulnerable with your story and kind of sharing like what those things were back when you were a kid that affected you all the way up until you really got serious post-college when you met your wife, Andrea. And so now that we know your story, man, I mean, what would you say to an out-of-shape parent who knows they need to get it together, but they can't seem to connect the dots? I mean, what's the first step to positive change in your experience? And I'm going to ask you to answer this in two ways. One, for the type A person like you, who's like routine. Mm-hmm. And then for kind of the free bird, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay. My answer to both, first off, would be embrace your weird and embrace your oddities, embrace the ways that your life just doesn't sync up with what air quotes should be happening. I think that's maybe one of the best things I ever did was just embrace that my marriage is weird. My lifestyle is weird. I'm pretty weird. I just don't follow a lot of the same rules that are out there for fitness and things like that. So once I embrace that and I realize, okay, you know, there's some rules you can't break, like you can't out train a bad diet and all that stuff, but like time, you know, you only hear about you got to work out in the mornings fasted, or you got to work out after, you know, right after work to deal with the stress. Very few people talk about what I do, which is the mid-morning with all the old people at the gym. I love that time. I'm 42. I'm the youngest person at the gym during those hours. I get there at like 9:30. I love, you know, chit-chatting with the old people. If you can do it, I know not a lot of people can do that. It's because of work.
Sure.
But, you know, embrace what's weird about your lifestyle, I guess, is that's my point here.
Sure. Well, and I'll kind of piggyback off of that. So it's funny. It's like when I look at life, if everyone's going left, you can bet on it, I'm going right. And the reason is because left to me is, you know, not really taking my physical fitness seriously, or my marriage or my relationships, or realizing that I only on this earth once, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that what you say is powerful because some people may not understand it because maybe they have not embraced that. But I agree. I mean, you kind of like what Dave Ramsey says, live like no one else now so you can live like no one else later. Like, do you want to be the super fit, you know, older guy who's still running around playing football in the yard on Thanksgiving? Or do you want to be the guy who is, you know, hunched over in a cane and wondering what happened, you know? And so I think that's great advice, man. So you became a trainer.
Yes.
And, you know, it's awesome, man. And what I love about that is you take a guy like me who's been training for over a decade who didn't deal with these issues. I mean, I dealt with the bullying a little bit, but nothing that really set me off kilter to the point that food became an addiction or anything. And so not to discredit anything I've ever done, but one thing I've never done is lost massive amounts of weight. And so I'm gonna give your Body Shepherd Online a little plug here, man, because
oh, thank you.
Because I think anybody who can relate with your story of this emotional eating that initially caused some things that maybe weren't necessarily dealt with that led into adulthood, I think that the Body Shepherd Online and what you have to offer could really help people. So why don't you kind of tell everybody a little bit about Body Shepherd, and then we'll kind of close this thing out.
Yeah, Body Shepherd is really the culmination of everything that I've mentioned. If you would have told the 20-year-old me that I'd be a personal trainer someday, I would have laughed in your face. Maybe even the 30-year-old me just never would have thought this. But as I found myself at the gym being asked more and more and more, how do you do this? Why do you do that? The head trainer came up and said, you should look into getting certified. We could use another trainer here. And you seem to know what you're doing. So, and you have a great story. So look into it. So I did. And I became a certified personal trainer through NASM and put a certificate on all this experience. And now I train people. I train just a handful of people in person here in the little town I'm in Ohio. But then most of my clients are online and I put together plans for them. And we check in once a week. If life is going rough, sometimes it's more than once a week. I have a client, I'll not say his name, but you know, he's just gone through a really rough patch with work. And he pretty much just threw in the towel. I didn't hear from him for 2 weeks. And later I talked to him and learned what was going on. And it's like, man, that, you know, that is a lot of bad stuff that you've just gone through. But what he tells me and what my other clients have told me is that my having gone through a weight loss and coming out of obesity and things like that is valuable to them because I've been through these things and I'm kind of like I'm out of the hole and I'm kind of reaching down and I'm helping them climb up and out of it because I got out of that hole. In my heaviest times, I still had a job to go to. And I'll tell you, when I was working those weird hours and I was ballooning up to 325, I remember there was one point in time I had reached, I think, a 42 inseam waist for pants. And I was driving to work and the button popped. And I had to stop at a Walmart at like 8 o'clock in the morning to go in and get a new pair of slacks because it was like, you know, dress code at that office. And I had to go up to the 44s because I couldn't fit in a 42 anymore. And I know what it's like to, you know, bend over to tie your shoes, or maybe you get so big that having shoes that tie is really no longer an option.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's a tough place to be in.
Sure. Sure. No, man, that's powerful stuff, man. I know you got your train rolling through, so we'll wrap this up real quick. So if any of you guys are interested in Dan's Body Shepherd Online program, where can they find you, man?
Bodyshepherd.com, and that's Shepherd, so Shepherd.com. For right now, it's just me running things. So if you send a message, you're going to get directly to me. I'm all about helping the overweight and the obese population, men and women, journey out of that and into a fit lifestyle.
Yeah. Love it, man. Love it, buddy. Love it. Well, awesome, Dan. Thanks so much for your time today, man. I know that I know there are going to be some people that really relate with your story, and I certainly hope that it causes some positive change in their life and it makes them take a step forward in the right direction. So thanks for sharing your story and being vulnerable with us, man. And
thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for your time today. If this concept and message brings you or anyone else you know value, the best compliment you can give me, honestly, is to listen, review, subscribe, and share this episode on all major platforms like iTunes, Stitcher, and Google. Next, don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at the Fit Dad Life Podcast and on Instagram at the Fit Dad Life 3. Until next time, everyone, continue to strive to become the leader your wives and kids deserve you to be, and I will continue to do the same. Take care, everyone.